And welcome back. Now to one of the most effective filmmakers of our era. Ken Burns has established himself for a series of outstanding documentaries. His treatment of such subjects as the Civil War, jazz, and baseball, just to name a few, have won major awards and enlightened the country. His latest film, which focused on cancer, aired last month on PBS. But he has a lot more on his plate. Burns will be delivering the commencement address at Washington University tomorrow. I spoke with him earlier today by phone, and he started by saying how St. Louis has been important to him and his work.
I don't think I can imagine a project that hasn't brought us here in one fashion or another, from the Civil War to jazz to baseball, of course, to many of the films we've worked on, and then our ability to come back and work with the local PBS station to promote that film. So it feels like a second home.
Now, of course,
great to be back. I've been friends with Gerald Early, a professor at Washington University, for more than two decades, and it's always great to have an excuse to visit with him.
I wanted to bring that up. I know that Gerald Early would be a draw because you've utilized him so many times on your program. He's quite a resource, isn't he?
He's an extraordinary human being. He's, first of all, so smart and so knowledgeable, and combines the kind of poetry of the English teacher, which he is, with the historian, which he also is. And I think that makes for a wonderful combination. And since in American history, as I don't need to tell folks in St. Louis, the main theme of American history has been this question of race, he's able to understand it and present it in a very thoughtful and cool and rational fashion that doesn't inflame partisanship, but rather reminds us that our obligation is to sort of stick our oars in the water and pull together.
Well, inasmuch as you've brought that up and being someone who is very familiar with St. Louis, what has been your take and your view of this community over the course of the last months, starting with all the turmoil around Ferguson?
Well, I think what's playing out here, but it isn't just here, and so I think St. Louisans, thoughtful and sensitive St. Louisans who are anguished about it, as correctly they should be, can also understand that this is an American problem. It's not a Missouri problem. It's not a St. Louis problem. It's an American problem, and it's been around, and it's made manifest, strangely, in the last several years in sort of stronger relief than we expected. There were many people who sort of said, oh, we're done with all of that, and I was always, for a while, not alone, but among a small chorus of people saying, nope, we're not done with it yet. And God willing, you know, by educating ourselves, improving ourselves, as this extraordinary institution, Washington University, does, we might be able to grow a generation that can begin to escape the sort of troubles of our history.
Well, given the kind of work you do, is that something that you might take a new look at, given what's going on in the country today?
Well, you know, Don, it not specifically on that moment, because I'm in the business of history, and, you know, history is about stories that are over, and this is a story that's ongoing. But, you know, having said that, I can't think of a film that I've done, maybe one or two, that haven't been at some aspect about race, about this sub-theme in American life. You know, the American experiment is first and foremost a question about what is the nature of freedom. And yet we're born having imprisoned 4 million human beings by the time of the Civil War. And so that contradiction is something that continues to play out in American society. So whether it's baseball, whether it's jazz, whether it's the Second World War, whether it's, you know, any of the topics we've chosen, inevitably race plays a factor in that story, and sometimes, as in baseball or in jazz, a central factor.
Yeah. What is this something that you'll be including in your message to some 2,800 students tomorrow at Washington University? I know you're still working on your commencement address.
Well, you know, I'm always fiddling and tinkering. It's the filmmaker in me, the perfectionist in me. But, yeah, I think that we'll engage themes about the way in which our past informs our present, the way in which a knowledge of the past ensures that we have a better understanding of that present, and more importantly, helps us understand what lies ahead.
Your association with PBS has been long and you've done so much with that particular network. I wanted to raise an issue that we're giving some discussion to here at Public Radio, and that is it has been proposed that it go commercial. I suppose if that ever happened, PBS would be inclined to do the same thing. Who knows? Do you have any thoughts on that? Ira Glass has made that proposal.
Yeah, I'm completely and utterly against it. We do depend on underwriters, some of whom are corporate, and they are given at the head and tail of our shows ample thanks. But I think one of the reasons that I'm happy to be in public television, that I'm honored that they'd have me, is that there are no commercials, that I can be the master of my content, that I can explore complicated and sometimes difficult things in ways that commercial, as we've seen through the history of the United States, commercial networks are often loath to explore. And I think we forget that there are pressures that come about that are subtle and sometimes not so subtle, and we've got to be on guard against them. And that's, you know, I'm vehemently opposed to that. It's all right. We want to be public. Public broadcasting wants to be public, and so we want to invite everyone in. We enjoy support from contributions from corporations and individuals and foundations and government granting agencies at local and as well as national levels, and that's good. It should be that hodgepodge. President Reagan told me that. He was thrilled that my Civil War had a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. He says, that's right, government primes the pump, and then the private sector picks up the slack, and he loved the idea of a partnership of public-private. He spoke to that frequently, and so I'm willing to go with the Gipper and continue the way we are, as sometimes difficult and frustrating as it is with funding and the perpetual tin can out asking for donations. But I think that keeps us honest, and I think it keeps our mission. You know, in PBS, the public is the P. Broadcasting is obviously the B, but the S is not system. It's service. And I don't want to see that service diminished.
You know, I think most of us lose sight of the fact as to how important it is to a filmmaker to be able to present his or her product uninterrupted. It has to make quite a difference in the way you prepare for what you do. I think of commercial filmmakers who complain when their films are put on commercial television and they are interrupted. They say it destroys everything.
And I have colleagues who actually produce for cable and network, and they have to sort of artificially make those dramas, those hooks, you know, every 6 to 8 minutes so that the program can go away to sell you 6 or 8 different things. And if you haven't flipped the channel by then, you come back and they have to re-remind you what they're about and then prepare for the next hook. And at that time, you essentially stay, as they complain to me, on a superficial level where we thank those that brung us profusely at the beginning and the end, and then dive down and for upwards of 2 hours can give you a full, unfettered, and we think very deep dive into our subject.
You know, I'm a little surprised, I think, that you've just mentioned that the Civil War goes back to the Ronald Reagan era. Has it really been that long?
It has been that long. In fact, it came out in 1990, but I was working on it from the end of Christmas of 1984, and I happened to have been invited to an event at the White House and spoke to the president about the project that I was working on, and he asked about it and how the funding came about and was so absolutely thrilled. And I think particularly today, we should be mindful of those who are certain that the government should get out of everything, that we require this. He understood that. He wasn't talking about no government. He was talking about good government. And as much as he cut taxes, he also raised them when he felt it was necessary. There are some things, you know, boots on the ground in Afghanistan today, the firemen that may have to come to your house at 3 a.m. that the marketplace doesn't take care of. And I think also public broadcasting is an important component. Now, you know, they aren't about the essentials, but I think they also remind us of the essentials of our history, the essentials of our daily life, and the complexity and the wide ranging of it. It's not just somebody who's taken, you know, lick their finger and lifted it up to the wind and taken a demographic poll of what this particular niche audience, we're obligated to try to serve people. And I'm thrilled, for example, that our ratings, say, on the Roosevelt series are as high in Arkansas and Alaska and Oklahoma and West Virginia as they are in, you know, New York or California or Washington State. I mean, I'm trying to make films for all Americans and share the glories of our shared past with all Americans.
Well, you've helped, in a sense, shape the lives, I think, and certainly the understanding many Americans have and have had of so much of our history. I'm just curious as to how the various projects you've worked on over the years have maybe changed you or affected you or changed your worldview. Have you felt that you have changed as a result of what you've done?
Oh, my goodness. How could you not? I mean, just to take one like the Civil War, but any of the projects, the celibate religious sect, the Shakers, the story of the building of the Brooklyn Bridge or the Statue of Liberty, the history of Congress, jazz, the Second World War. I'm working on a massive history of the Vietnam War right now that I think will probably be the most important thing I do because it's such a source of division and such a source of misunderstanding, and we hope to be able to share a story that all Americans can rally around, that I believe that history is still a table around which we can all, regardless of where we live or what we believe or who we vote for, we can all have a civil discourse. So each one of those films, those deep dives, really alter my thing. I hope I'm growing as a person as well as a filmmaker. I hope I'm getting better as a filmmaker, and I think I'm getting better as a person as a result of dedicating myself to understanding these complex things and not just taking the facile and superficial and easy way out of telling a story. Sometimes things are really, really complicated, and the audience appreciates that. We had upwards of 35 million people watch The Roosevelts when it was broadcast last September. That's unheard of, and every time we do a big series, we're always told, oh, no one will watch it. Everybody has the attention span of a gnat, that all you get are these 2 minutes on YouTube. But in fact, we are all starved for meaning, and meaning accrues in duration. The relationships you care most about, the work that you care most about has benefited from your sustained attention, and that's true of everyone within the sound of my voice, and that's what you want to play to. It's not that you can't enjoy those 2 minutes. We do, and we should, but we also ought to reserve time to curate and develop our attention in longer subjects, in longer forms, where meaning has a possibility to deepen and resonate and change, as you say.
Of course, your most recent film is Cancer, The Emperor of All Maladies, that just aired a few weeks ago. What has the response to that been? I know it was a very personal subject for you.
It was a subject, Don, I couldn't not do. I'm way busy. I've got a lot of my sort of, I guess you'd call them the traditional subjects. But I needed to do this. My own mother died when I was 11 after a 10-year battle of cancer that I watched close up and firsthand. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't fun. And I admired her heroism and basically needed to honor her memory, even though it's been 50 years since she passed away. And so it was impossible for me to turn down. As you know, I didn't actually produce and direct it. I was the executive producer and the senior creative consultant and a co-writer of the film, but I was involved and had my sleeves rolled up, and I'm very proud, and the reaction has been tremendous. In fact, I'm in a hotel in St. Louis, and I just was stopped by someone in the common area saying, you know, I'm from Virginia, we love this, we use it now in fundraisers and in tools and teaching tools, and that's something that's been out barely a month. So,
did you come out of that whole process optimistic that one of these days in the not-too-distant future, we're going to lick this particular problem?
Well, you know, that particular problem is actually 100 different problems. Mm-hmm. There's so many different kinds of cancer, sure. And some of them we've licked, and some of them we're in the process of licking or making, you know, more chronic than it is fatal. And yes, I feel hugely optimistic that as the research goes on, as we focus our energies, as we sort of take advantage of new advances in genomic understanding, of being able to crunch metadata with supercomputers, that we're going to be able to individualize cancer treatment and figure out how to, knock down a lot of them that are still causing us so much trouble. And that will be really great, obviously, for all those missing people out there that could have been here not, had not this emperor of all maladies taken them from us.
Ken Burns, the technology has changed so much since you've started. I mean, we're now deep, well, maybe not so deep, but we're certainly into the digital age. How does that change what you do, or does it?
It does, and it does in good and it does in bad ways. And I've tried, with regard to those bad ways, to try to retain a modicum of my sort of conservative, old-fashioned self. We still shoot film, actual film in a camera, a good deal still, in addition to shooting digitally. We've now abandoned sort of editing by hand and tape splicing, and have had enjoyed enormous benefits to that, and we no longer have to travel to hundreds and hundreds of archives physically and get images. We can often access them online, or at least know what's there and then go to the ones that have the best stuff. But I've tried to keep this same relationship that I had in the very beginning, in which this is a very labor-intensive, time-consuming process. We don't have a research period. We never stop researching, and we don't have a legion of researchers. We just do it ourselves, the writer and the co-producers and maybe one researcher and myself, and we want to touch the material ourselves and see it and spend many years on it. By the time the Vietnam Project is broadcast in 2017, I will have been working on it for more than a decade.
Wow. You know, are you...
The digital world suggests that everything can be quick and dirty, and we're just trying to retain that sense of honor, authenticity, you know, diligent research. We're going to make our mistakes, but at least we are giving ourselves enough time to try to catch them, and we always take on a lot of the finest scholars who often help us from taking a wrong turn, or let us know that the opposite of something might not be equally so that you can engage not so much a debate with the purpose of argument, but understand that there are more than one way to see a phenomenon.
You know, in the Civil War, going back for just a moment, you were the director, producer, co-writer, chief cinematographer, music director, and executive producer. That's quite a full portfolio there. Can you take on all of that again in Vietnam or any of the other things that are in the pipeline?
I don't want to. And more importantly, the people, this is a collaborative medium, and the people I've worked with for many years, some dating back to the Civil War and beyond, that I still am working with, deserve to be delegated to, deserve to have themselves tested. And so while I still produce and direct, and I add a lot of writing, and I executive produce, which is meaning I raise all the money, I can let someone else do the cinematography. I can let someone co-produce or co-direct with me, as Lynn Novick is doing on the Vietnam series. And all of that is wonderful, and it also permits me to do more than one film at once. So as we're nearing the end of editing on Vietnam, we're also nearing the editing on a film you'll see before Vietnam next year, on the life of Jackie Robinson, a two-part, four-hour documentary on his life, which I think will explode a lot of myths and show a much more complex and interesting person than the guy who's sort of the statue standing out there in the field, perfect but without dimension. And I think we'll be able to add some dimension, thanks in large part to his widow, who at 92 too, is still alive and incredibly generous with her time and her energies remembering the story, will give everyone a fresh portrait.
I understand there are a couple of other things in the pipeline you might just mention or give us a little more detail on. One is country music is one of them, and the other is the history of stand-up comedy.
Yeah, the history of stand-up comedy. We're doing a massive history of country music. I'm in Nashville, it seems, every month filming for that, and a nice relief from the editing room in Vietnam, as you can imagine. And we're doing a biography of Ernest Hemingway. It's in the early stages, and we just finished an interview with Woody Allen for the stand-up. So lots of stuff going on and many things on the horizon for which I'm raising money for and thinking about. And I spent 2 hours yesterday just hearing the story of Joseph Pulitzer, who is no stranger to St. Louis, and thinking how great it would be to do a complex and deep biography of him. So, as they say, stay tuned.
Well, we certainly will do that, Ken Burns. You're a very, very busy guy. We're happy that you're here in St. Louis for a couple of days. And, of course, the students at Washington University will be very, very happy to hear you tomorrow during that commencement address.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be back.